Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back. Hey, listen, we need some truth. In fact, I would submit to you, we need some savage truth about what's happening in this world. So guess what? We've got one of the top recognized financial experts in the country. I am very pleased to tell you we have Terry Savage returning to our program, nationally recognized expert on personal finance, the markets, and the economy, regular blogger at the Huffington Post. She's been a frequent guest on television, radio shows, CNN, appeared many times on Oprah, PBS, Nightly Business Report, CNN, CNBC. The list goes on and on. She's won two Emmys for her work on television. Love that. She's written several books, including her most recent edition of The Savage Truth on Money. And Terry began her career as a stock broker and became a founding member and the first woman trader on the Chicago Board Options Exchange. And we are very happy to have some of her precious time today. Welcome, Terry.
I'm delighted to be back with you, David.
Listen, it's a super thrill for me because you, when you open up the dictionary, you look up the word prolific and there you are. All right. So thank you for taking some time for us. And you know, we were looking at your website, the terrysavage.com website, and you just got so much there to choose from. I'm like, okay, let's try to narrow this down. But I really want to hit a couple key things that I know you've written about recently. And one of them, which is very recent, you did an article you wrote about China. And I just really love your take on it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. We're hearing all about in the news how China in their centralized management and bureaucracy that they have of trying to, this really is kind of an experiment, I suppose, but they're doing this government-controlled attempt at capitalism.
Government-controlled free market.
Free market, there we go.
Moron, but that's what China's trying to have.
Exactly.
And, of course, they're not being too successful about that. On the other hand, we're moving in the United States a little bit more toward that direction of government-controlled free markets.
Yeah.
So they just come at it from one extreme, and we fortunately have been at the other extreme of pretty truly free market here.
Maybe they beat us to it.
Being nibbled at along the way.
Yeah, maybe they beat us to it, Terry. Well, the big thing has been all about them, as you know, about devaluing their currency. And I really found your thoughts, and I'd love for you to share them with our listeners. Your observations about the relative percentage of devaluation that has occurred versus Canada and some of the other countries that we do a lot of trading with.
This is China is giantly misunderstood, and it is a giant. And it's a mistake to misunderstand, and even worse, for our politicians, both parties, to demagogue about China on stuff that they, not only the politicians don't understand, but upon which they have been recently very dead wrong.
Mm.
So let's just understand that China is not our largest trading partner, but our second largest. So there's dinner table conversation. Our largest trading partner is actually Canada.
Yeah.
Now, China has kept its currency pegged, tied to the dollar for up until recently, for 7 or 8 years.
Right.
That meant that when the dollar was stronger, let's talk about their currency. You'll hear it referred to as the renminbi or the yuan.
Yeah.
And those are almost interchangeable. The renminbi is really what the name of the currency is, and the yuan, Y-U-A-N.
Okay.
Yuan is the specific price of an item. But either way, let's use them interchangeably. And the Chinese kept their renminbi yuan currency pegged to the dollar for many years. Now, you know the dollar's been getting stronger.
Sure.
And you know that means that it takes more of some other currency to buy our stuff. So our exports have been falling because it takes more euros to buy $1 worth of U.S. goods. Well, the same thing was happening to China because they were tied to the dollar. So suddenly their stuff and their whole economy has been based on exporting stuff.
Sure.
And all of a sudden it took more Japanese yen or more Australian dollars or more European euros to buy their stuff. So they found that their economy was slowing down.
Ooh.
So they decided to devalue, unhook from the dollar,
yeah,
and lower the value of their currency a little bit. But let me put this in perspective when we get back to the issue you asked about politics and what we know about China. The Chinese currency has been devalued by about 5 to 6% with all these headlines. The Canadian currency is down 25%. You go to Canada if you want a vacation right now. I know you're in Florida and it's hot. Just fly up to Toronto, Montreal, because your dollar goes so much further. It used to be about three years ago, the Canadian dollar was at parity.
Oh, yeah.
Now you get $1.32 of Canadian for every American dollar. So go shopping up in Canada, America, because it's cheap. And believe me, nobody's yelling at the Canadians that they've devalued their dollar. Of course, they're a currency based on commodities, natural resources. So their dollar has fallen in value as the price of oil and the price of gold and everything else has fallen. But we're not yelling at Canada, our biggest trading partner. We should not be yelling at China.
Well, I have to ask the question, Terry, and this may be a little bit outside the limits or provocative here, but I'm trying to figure out why that is. Why are we kind of painting them as the enemy and what they've done to, they've pegged and now they unhook?
Well, China has became over the last 20 years or so the manufacturer for the world. And because China's labor was cheaper, it's not, by the way, the manufacturer of the world anymore. That's moved on. That's moved on to places like Vietnam and,
right,
and other Asian countries. But because it was easy 10 years ago to say China, quote, took our jobs by paying its workers less. Now China's suffering our problems. Nobody's buying their stuff because it's too expensive. They had to devalue their currency. Their economy slowed. They built all these buildings, apartment buildings and factories. They're not being used. And they've got a very upset middle class that's going, what do we do? So what is China to do? The first thing they did is several months back, starting at the beginning of the year, pump a lot of money into the economy. And where did it go? Into the Chinese stock market. So everybody, you know, there was nothing to buy for the Chinese, so they bought stocks to speculate. And then that market crashed. Then the Chinese government, oh, we can't have our market crash. They put billions of dollars into supporting their stock market. They're learning some lessons about what it's like to have a free market economy.
Yeah.
So they've got their own set of problems. Chinese growth has been reported as, quote, only 7%, maybe only 5%, maybe less.
Yeah.
Look, we're growing at 2%.
Right.
So they're growing, but not as fast as they were. They've got their own set of problems, and we can't blame them for ours.
Would it be fair to say that they're not doing these things to try to necessarily hurt us as much as helping themselves?
Oh, no. You know, first of all, they need us. They need America and the rest of the world to be healthy, to buy their stuff.
Yeah.
Because if they don't sell stuff to the rest of the world, the fact remains that they can't have an economy growing and they're going to have political unrest. And conversely, guess what? We need them. The Chinese Central Bank is the largest holder of U.S. Treasury IOUs.
It's over a trillion.
You know, exactly. We keep running deficits. Okay, they're smaller now. This year will only be $300 or $400 billion.
Yeah.
But for years, it was $1 trillion.
Sure.
Well, who buys those IOUs? It's been the Chinese Central Bank, Japanese Central Bank, to a great extent. So they need us to buy their stuff. We pay for them with dollars. And what do they do with those dollars? They turn around and lend us the money in the form of buying our treasury IOUs.
Yeah.
So they may be our enemy. In other ways, they may want to grow to be the world's largest economy, and they, even if it's a slowdown, likely will be in the next 30 years. But they have the world's largest population as well.
Right. Hey, listen, they can have that. Have the title. If that helps to create more demand for our goods and services and all those good things that come with that, then have at it. Grow your economy and grow. We need that. All right, Terry, well, let's do this. Let's grab a quick break. Terry Savage, ladies and gentlemen, she is our guest today, terrysavage.com. And Terry's most recent book, new edition of The Savage Truth on Money, over at her website. Quick break. We'll be right back with Terry.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. A financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. A fiduciary also means an advisor should recommend products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance company or investment company tells him he has to sell. Next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary? Yes or no?" If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer's probably no. This public service announcement is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back. Terry Savage on the line. Welcome back, Terry. Glad to have you with us. Let's talk about another subject I know that you recently also wrote about. Do you have a machine that just pumps out all these articles and columns? Good grief.
I write a syndicated column twice a week.
Wow.
And it appears, it's syndicated by Chicago Tribune.
Yes.
It appears in newspapers around the country.
Excellent.
And on my website, terrysavage.com.
Excellent. Well, that's where we'll have them go and get more information. Of course, check out The Savage Truth on Money, the book as well. Well, the other one, another one of my favorite that you wrote recently was, and I love your title, The Market Always Fools the Greatest Number of People. And I just love that because, you know, all these market pundits and would-be prognosticators, soothsayers, and sages have just seemed to all get it wrong. They're calling for this, and it does the opposite.
Well, that's, I didn't come up with that. I mean, that's an old saying in the market. Gosh, someone told me that 40 years ago when I started out as a,
we'll give
a
you
young
credit.
Trader. And it's really kind of, it's a simple thing, but it's pretty profound. When everybody believes, for instance, that the market's going higher, then that really means there's no one left to buy.
Mm.
And all those people are in and happy and thinking, oh, my God, it's going higher. But when everybody, well, the greatest number of people is involved in one direction, it's basically self-limiting.
Yeah. Well, you know, this idea that you could actually call the market's direction, you know, day in and day out, I mean, it's just impossible. But why do people...
There are fortunes. And not being built, trading the market and making money, that too, I'm sure, by those who are successful enough, but by those who sit there in the media or sit on CNBC or Fox Business and talk about where they think the market's going.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to get caught up in the process of trading and buying and selling. But let me tell you something. Last year, 85% of mutual fund money managers failed to beat their benchmark index. If the pros who are being paid to beat the indexes can't beat the market, why should you think that you going home in the afternoon after work and, you know, looking at a few charts or something could do it? My idea has always been that you don't have to beat the market. You'll be fine if you'll just be the market. Let me give you a couple of market facts. There has never been a 20-year period, going back to 1926 now, there's never been a 20-year period where you would have lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company American stocks with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation.
Right.
So take the S&P 500 index. Adjusted, even adjusted for inflation, and we didn't have it back in the 20s, but you take that large cap portfolio from 29 to 49, 52 to 72, there's never been a 20-year period where you came out a loser. In fact, the average annual return is 10%. This is according to Ibbotson, market historians, 10%
right,
with dividends reinvested. So the point I'm trying to make is you don't have to spend your time and energy trying to beat the market. You need to start out young when time's on your side.
Excellent.
Make a plan.
Yep.
Put that $300 a month in your IRA or 401k and keep at it even when you're scared.
Well put, Terry.
That's a winning strategy.
That is a very much a winning strategy. And the people that get hurt are the ones that try to get in, get out, and figure, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and this is going to happen, and that's really dangerous. Now, if we fast forward somebody that's actually going into retirement, now it changes a little bit, right? Because you've got a different perspective, and you don't have the same kind of time horizon, and you may need to be drawing on those monies.
That's exactly the point of that column. It's very easy for me to tell 20, 30, 40-year-old people, or even in your early 50s, that 20-year time horizon story because, I mean, God willing, for sure that's what you have.
Right.
And when you retire, a lot of people are not going to be able to retire in the traditional sense. That was my book, The Savage Number, How Much Money Do You Really Need to Retire, written about 10 years ago now, actually, when I saw this coming. There are a lot of people that are never going to be able to really retire in the traditional sense of give up the job and not keep earning money. A lot of people are either going to try and hang on in their job part-time as consultants or do something else in retirement to earn money. That's going to make the biggest difference in your retirement lifestyle. But even so, if you do retire at, say, age 65, life expectancies are stretching out now.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
I give speeches around the country and I have a great slide It's an Allstate ad, actually. It says, last year, Hallmark sold 85,000 happy 100th birthday cards.
Wow.
So, you know, it's no longer the strange thing with Willard on the Today Show. Saying,
right.
You know, Mildred's 102. She drinks a shot of bourbon every day. We have more people living longer and better lives.
You didn't have time enough to talk about all of them.
You know, you get a new hip, a new knee, or whatever, and you're off and playing golf again. So you're going to need some growth in retirement. But you are not going to want to put all of your money in the stock market because you need liquidity for withdrawals from your retirement account. You need a cushion of what I call chicken money.
Yeah. Well, you can't have it all in the market at that point. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, the other thing that I think is really important to make note of as people look at what the market's doing and as they're thinking about it, the thing that really, I think, messes people up is they're looking at the number of points the S&P or the Dow, especially the Dow, is moving on a given day, as opposed to looking at the actual percentage.
Yeah, the numbers are headline shocking, but that's another key point to this. If you're not following the market on a day-to-day basis because you're younger and you use dips because your $300 a month buys more shares, then you'd really prefer to see the market go down.
Right.
You want
right.
it to go up between the time you buy the stocks and the time you retire and start withdrawing. So this headline news, up 400, down 400, we're at Dow 16,000.
Yeah.
So the percentages are still relatively small. When the market crashed in 1987, you had a 27% decline in one day.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now that.
That's a loss.
That was hurtling. I was there. I was on the trade
floor. Yeah, that's a loss. That makes a meal out of these little piddly 3 or 4% over a few days.
But on the other hand, I was just looking at some numbers that I wanted to put into account. You know, average bear market. We've had bear markets 73, 74. The S&P 500 lost 48%. Between 2007 and 2009, you had a decline of 40. Look, the Dow went from 13,000 to 6,500 in 2007, 2008, 2009.
Right.
I mean, I sat there on every radio and TV show saying, no, if you're younger, just keep putting the money in and don't sell out now. Don't panic. That's how bottoms are made. My advice to people now who are listening, who are in retirement or closer to retirement, we are still only just around 10% off the all-time high. I mean, in, quote, correction territory. If this gave you a heart attack watching the market swings of the last couple of weeks, the end of August and early September, it's okay to sell stuff and raise some cash.
Right.
And sell down to the sleeping point is another old market thing.
Because I like that.
If you think it's going to be a real bear market, you know that the whole market thing could go down 30, 40%.
Sure.
And that would only be typical. So we're only down 10% now. If this is your warning shot across the bow, yes, young people keep buying. Retirees, pre-retirees, getting close to retirement. They talk about the bulls and the bears. I had a third category. The bulls, the bears, and the chickens. Chicken money is money you cannot afford to lose. You
That's
don't
right.
get any interest on it these days, but it lets you sleep at night. Raise some chicken money now.
I like that. That's a good way to put it, Terry. Raise some chicken money. Get down to the sleep at night level. Terry Savage, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today, terrysavage.com. And, of course, The Savage Truth on Money is our latest edition, latest book. And we'll grab a quick break and we'll come back. And I got one more for Terry to talk about, so stay right there.
Are you looking for a trustworthy local advisor for your investment and retirement planning, but you're not sure how or where to begin? Start by looking for a certified financial planner practitioner. Visit www.cfp.net to search for an advisor in your local area who's earned this highly regarded professional certification. Pick 3 CFP practitioners. Set an appointment and interview them. Ask questions. Listen carefully to their answers. Check references and research their firms with the Better Business Bureau. This PSA is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. We're glad to hold Terry over for one more segment. And even the brilliant choose balance, Terry. That's another sage title from one of your recent columns, and I appreciate your staying on with us to talk about it. So what's the point here is that even really smart people try to be more balanced in their approach?
Well, you know, it sounds like when we talked about chicken money, we talked about balance, we talked about the stage of your life and having the appropriate risk and so forth. And yet some people seem to think of the stock market as a challenge to their both their intellect and their maybe in some cases their masculinity. Oh, I could beat the bear, I could fight the bear, I could be a that kind of thing. And I just wanted people to know that it is not wimpy to chicken out with a portion of your money.
Thank you.
So I repeated a story written by actually a really interesting guy, Marshall Jaffe of Jaffe Asset Management, wrote a column, and he brought this up. Terry Markowitz, who has won the Nobel Prize for stock market concept of the efficient frontier in investment management, and this is a guy who's on the literally efficient frontier or cutting edge of investment, is quoted by Jaffe as saying, you know, if the stock market goes way up and I'm not in it, I'll feel stupid.
Right.
And if it goes way down and I'm in it, I'll feel stupid. So
right.
I went 50-50.
I only want to be half stupid.
You know, but I like that. That's been my style, so I guess I respond to that. If someone says to me, shall I sell it all now? I go, why don't you sell half? That way you can never be all right or wrong. Or is it too high to buy? I go, well, you know, if you put $300 a month in every month, you'll never catch the top, you'll never catch the bottom. I don't think you have to make this lifetime commitment
right.
to being in fully invested. I think that the issue is balance, and
right.
the balance changes depending on your stage in life and your personal circumstances. And the point is, of the headline, even the brilliant Markowitz is like one of the most brilliant market theorists, and won a Nobel Prize, for goodness sake. But even he understood his own emotions would lead him to make really bad mistakes because, and that's what happens to all of us, it takes great self-discipline to make a plan and stick to it. And so he decided to kind of hedge his bets. I like that.
Well, does it make sense to look at it at, you know, getting this mix of different investments, this asset allocation? It's really a way of really getting peace of mind so that you are able to withstand the emotional turbulence that goes on when the market does the same.
Exactly. Look, I'm called upon in the midst of most of those market declines to come on various radio and TV shows. And you know, it was almost easier for me. And I never have ever made a move in my own account at a time when I was counseling patients on the part of people.
Right.
And because I felt that I was appropriately invested, and because I, you know, over the long run, do believe in the future of America, it was easy for me in 2009, in spring, March of 2009, when the market was bottoming out, we didn't know it then, around 6,500, to say, okay, you just got to keep investing, stay calm, don't sell now. What's more difficult for me today is knowing I'm talking to an audience, many of whom have been investing regularly and followed that discipline from 6,500 all the way up to 17, 18,000.
Right.
But many of them who have gained and who are now older, 10 years older than they were back then, 10 years
right.
closer to retirement, and
right.
some of them in retirement. And so right now, I don't know where the top is, but I'm counseling you to take a look right now as we start the fall season, before the year-end ups and downs, before the funds are getting their stuff in order for their year-end statements,
right.
and say, how much risk am I taking?
Very
Should
good.
I move some of it out of the growth fund into an equity income fund? Should I be more balanced? Should I have more in a money market fund? Yeah, I know it yields nothing, but I can't lose anything. This is the moment, the beginning of fall. Don't let the market take you all the way down with it if that happens.
Yeah, why strap yourself to the market inexorably and irrevocably without having a more of a balance? And I just think that is the right way, Terry, for people to think about this. And as you said on the previous segment, you know, if a 10% drop has you freaking out, then you shouldn't be there, or at least not be there to such a good degree, and take this
exactly.
opportunity to reposition.
Exactly. And by the way, I think that's changing the tone of the market a little bit.
Yeah.
Because people are remembering that markets can and do fall farther and faster, and are using opportunities like the bounces to, if not dump stocks, but to readjust the balance of your investment. So that's
yeah.
a smart thing to do. I can't go wrong by telling you to do that. And
no.
I know you'll feel better if you lock in some profits. You can say, well, at least I sold X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
To the top.
Well, it's only smart to look at that and make sure you've got enough of your, you know, sell to the sleep point. I like that. So the thing really here isn't trying to necessarily be ultra sophisticated and fancy and, you know, outperform the market with your portfolio and taking, of course, the amount of risk that it takes to do that. It's really about getting to a point where you can feel comfortable and you can have a portfolio that really matches what you need instead of trying to beat the market and expect to do that on a regular basis.
Exactly. You've laid out the right expectations, of course, as usual. That's why you're doing this show. For those who hear it and have questions, TerrySavage.com is my website. I love to get questions. I try and answer all of them. I've been inundated lately and post the answers up on my web blog for those who want to read some of the past questions and answers and also my columns. TerrySavage.com. I have no clients. I sell nothing. I endorse nothing. The stuff I talk about is stuff I really believe.
Well, that's why we have you on, Terry, because you have your hands are on the button, your fingers are on the pulse. I'm glad you're paying attention to all this and you can help us get a perspective. And, you know, my listeners hear it from me, Terry, and it's good to have somebody else, you know, give them a perspective. And, you know, a lot of people are worried that things will go south really bad, and they are heeding some of the cautionary tone that is appropriate. But they, you know, they have to have a plan that they create when things are rational and when they can do it in a calm fashion so that they know what to do when things do turn badly and they can be prepared.
Exactly. That's the whole point, not to do things in a panic.
All right. Well, we will not do things in a panic and we will plan ahead. Terry Savage, ladies and gentlemen, she is a woman of many talents and much experience, and we're very pleased to have her on the program. The Savage Truth on Money is her recent book, and you can find all of this and more over at her website, terrysavage.com. And thank you much, Terry. We'll have you back.
Thanks very much, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.